and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Happy Monday. What a show. What a full show we have. See, now I feel Jane Lynch pressure because she opened with a big musical number.
Yeah.
We're getting ready for Eric Boehlert in Right Wing World. I think we need a jingle for our right wing friends.
In the field of feminine hygiene, I have our Newlander's douchebag of the year.
All right. Huh. She had jingle singers. I'm just saying, we have jingle singers.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
And a bunch of people called me and said, she said, put Mama down. Put Mama down now in the beat in the vault. I'm not saying they stole it from me. I'm just saying.
I think she listens.
I'm just saying we have an Eric Boehlert jingle. Singers.
Eric Boehlert from Media Matters for America doing the Lord's work as usual.
Eric Boehlert.
Come on, baby.
Eric Boehlert.
Let's dive into the right-wing world. I don't know what that means. Eric Boehlert from Media Matters, whom we love.
Boehlert. We got John Mellencamp to sing that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
So there. Good morning, Eric Boehlert.
Morning.
We don't have just any jingle singers for you, my friend. You know, I love, obviously I love all of your stuff, but it's the thing that we always talk about that's most infuriating is this whole meme of, oh, there's a liberal media. And I thought it was me during the coverage of these latest special elections, but you hit the nail on the head, in particular about Peggy Noonan, right, on this latest congressional race in upstate New York. I remember when, and this was the first time a Democrat had won in how many, like a jillion years in upstate New York, correct?
The New York 23 race, yeah.
Yeah. And it, as you say, it was a big Tea Party candidate, but as you write, congressional race in upstate New York, it was too messy, too local, too full of jumbly facts to yield a theme, according to Peggy Noonan. She concluded the congressional special election didn't signify much of anything. It certainly didn't tell us anything about Obama's standing. Fast forward to today, and Noonan is sure this week's congressional special election in Brooklyn, New York, where Republican won and traditionally Democratic seat was deeply meaningful and had all kinds of national implications. I mean, it really is stunning, right?
Yeah, I mean, she wrote a whole column about how this very, you know, local race and with a very unique population told us everything we needed to know about Obama's plummeting standing, you know, in U.S. politics. But in 2009, when the Tea Party, remember, that New York 23 race, that was the Tea Party's first, it was a real coming out party. They were going to put their own candidate in there. They were going to put all this national money. They were going to nationalize this race in upstate New York, and then they lost. And
right.
So then Peggy Noonan quickly wrote up a column saying, you know, you can't really tell anything from this special election. Well, you know, so her rule of thumb, which is you really can't lose, special elections don't mean anything unless Democrats lose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that one was fairly clear and in keeping with national polls about people's, you know, outright rejection of the Republicans' Destroy Medicare program, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they tried to make that a central, a central plank of that race. And upstate New York voters who, again, hadn't turned that, it had been Republican for 150 years. I mean, rejections don't come any more clear than that one.
Yeah.
But Noonan was sure it didn't really mean anything.
And, you know, Eric, I don't know what your take is on the New York one, but, I mean, on the other side, it seems to me that that's the one that had so many local angles that, you know what I mean, that do not necessarily reflect nationally. I mean, I think Israel and marriage equality and the specific things in that specific district seem more apropos to me.
Yeah, and it's a 40% Jewish population, which you're not going to find in many districts in America. Look, it wasn't good news for the White House or Obama or Democrats or anything like
right.
that. But it is telling that, you know, when the special election was very bad news for Republicans in 2009, you know, Peggy Noonan made sure to tell everyone special elections don't mean a thing. And then she writes an entire column about how special elections are sort of the prism into American politics.
This time they're really special. Yeah. All right. Let's let's dive into the right wing world. See what's doing. Allison Camerota on Fox and Friends this weekend.
Yep.
on the president's new, what are we calling it, the Buffett tax?
Well, they're calling it the Buffett tax.
It was Warren Buffett's idea, of course. The millionaires, like, he should pay their fair share. How radical.
Now we know how the president plans to raise taxes. It's a new campaign catchphrase. Listen for it tomorrow. We'll tell you about it now. The Buffett tax.
Buffett rule.
The Buffett rule. That's what it is. It's the White House inciting class warfare. It looks like it may already be started on Wall Street. We'll explain all of that.
The whole class warfare thing was was a meme on Fox News this weekend.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. Yeah. Not just Fox News. It was definitely the Republican talking point, which meant it was all over Fox News and it'll be all over talk radio today, et cetera. Look, I mean, if your entire political philosophy revolves around laying down your body in front of millionaires to benefit them, you know, that's not class warfare when Democrats call it out or tell it for what it is. You know, the line that Warren Buffett had that is going to absolutely drive Republicans and conservative bonkers is his tax rate. His tax rate is lower than his secretary's.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point he made, and that is as clear as day, and that has, you know, conservatives absolutely freaking out, because who wants to be the party that's, you know, fights for millionaires but not secretaries? So, you know, their fallback position is class warfare. Look, it's not really class warfare if one side is for everyone who makes less than $1 million and one side is for everyone who makes $1 million more.
Yeah.
So they've sort of dug this ditch, and now they're trying to climb out of it.
Well, did you happen to see Bill Clinton on Meet the Press?
I did not.
Yeah, it was. I just thought it was. Well, you know, he's obviously so good at this, at explaining things, but because there he is, and you remember the prosperity that we enjoyed under, and he basically, you know, had such a way of just kind of saying, well, you know, we're just really talking about putting them back to where they were when I was in all. office. I mean, it really is amazing.
Yeah.
That, you know, you think, remember, those policies worked. And, you know, they make it sound like it's some kind of huge tax increase. And we're just talking about going back to the Clinton rates.
Yeah, I mean, at the time when Clinton was president, we had, you know, peace and prosperity, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think there was this, you know, runaway feeling in America that millionaires were overtaxed. But as soon as Bush came into office, that's immediately what they did. And
you know,
Clinton's just saying, let's take it back to where we had it. It wasn't that bad. Everyone seemed to prosper just fine.
Right, Eric, that's what I'm saying. I mean, there it is, the walking human evidence where you can go, oh, yeah, when we did that, things were good. Then when Bush came in and did this is when things got bad. It seems so... I honestly can't believe we're still having this conversation.
It's like having a climate debate. I can't believe we're having a climate debate.
I know. All right.
The whole point is to confuse and confuse people.
This is a comedian on Fox and Friends.
Yeah, Stephen Crowder.
There's all this hoopla surrounding Rick Perry's comment on it being a Ponzi scheme. And really, it is a Ponzi scheme. Uh-huh. And the SEC on their website... they actually have a phone number and an email at SEC.gov. They say, if you think you see a Ponzi scheme at work, please let us know. And Allison, I don't think they know about this, so I brought it to their attention. And I encourage other people, too.
Well, did he, like, prank call
this? He prank called the SEC.
And then they encouraged all their viewers to essentially harass the SEC and report Social Security as a Ponzi scheme.
Should we even take the time, Eric, to explain that a Ponzi scheme you see is set up originally to defraud people with Social Security, set up as a social safety net and beloved by most Americans?
Okay. So therefore, it is not, by definition,
just
a Ponzi scheme.
It's not an illegal activity.
Yeah, Sean Hannity last week said that it was the government stealing money from you.
Sure. Meaning you pay into it your whole life, and then you expect to benefit in some way.
A return,
Okay. Whatever. All right, David Asman on... Forbes on Fox.
We're going to put up a chart of the poverty rate, which has spiked above 15% three times in the past 30 years. They came down, the poverty rate, dramatically when the government stopped spending a lot of money on poverty programs, first during the Reagan administration and then during the Democratic Clinton administration when he did welfare reform. So it actually brings down the poverty rate when you spend less money on these poverty programs.
Wow. I'd like to know where he's basing that chart on. Would you?
Well, it's interesting. You know, they did. Fox sort of did make a big deal about the poverty rate. They tried to pile on, you know, Obama's, and you know, another example of Obama's a failure. The poverty rate is down. But it's weird. I mean, the Fox News just, you know, can't stand poor people, and they've mocked them mercilessly in the past. But then for like a 48-hour window, they actually pretended they cared about poor people in order to hit Obama over the head. And now they're going right back to, you know, lazy poor people won't get a job. So depending on what day of the week it was last year, they were either, you know, bashing the poor or pretending they cared about them.
Yeah, so the best thing we can do is not help the poor, is their point. That's the best thing you can do for them. Yeah. Okay. Curtis Sliwa on Fox Business on the
We know he's a better campaigner than he is a president. So he'll have a long time to campaign. His complexion is his protection. Again, a lot of shots you might normally take at a president or a candidate for the presidency you won't, because it's Barack Obama, first black American president.
His complexion is his protection. Yep. Oh, that's clever. He spent time on that, Eric.
So Fox News... Obama's been protected by the right-wing machine because of his complexion. I mean,
yes.
His idea, you know, drives you crazy. So,
they haven't been at all critical because of that. You can tell that. Yes.
The fact that Obama's the first black president has completely stopped, you know, Fox News and the right-wing media from taking any cheap shots at Obama over the last 3 years.
Right.
And it's going to stop them from taking any, you know, launching any smear campaigns during the campaign.
So if you think, Eric, that it might actually be the opposite, that there might have been unprecedented disrespect to this president based on racial line, then you are crazy, my friend. You're thinking. Lots of people have had you lie yelled at them. Lots of presidents. Okay, 17 minutes after the hour, Eric Bollett remains in the sidecar. We continue with Right Wing World on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now, 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour, the Rude Pundit coming up after the bottom of the hour. Eric Bollert of Media Matters rejoins us to finish up Right Wing World. All right, Gretchen Carlson and Brian Kilmeade on. Oh dear. It's the crusade against Michelle Obama continues.
Michelle Obama.
Yes. She's announcing a new effort. You know, she's behind this whole fitness movement to try and control restaurant portion sizes specifically for kids.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looks like McDonald's is way ahead of the frame. The Great American Restaurant. Look at the new small fry. Is that unbelievable?
That's not real.
You might as well just individually wrap these French fries. That can't be happening. I mean, even kids would say, Mom, come on, what are you, punishing me?
Yeah, we couldn't possibly want to do anything about childhood obesity, which is a huge epidemic, could we, Eric?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, Laura Bush asked, you know, wanted kids to read more, and everyone thought that was great, and it was. And, you know, liberal bloggers and people on TV were mocking her and going after her. I mean, there was a certain precedent. The First Lady was not considered, you know, part of a nonstop smear campaign. But that's all out the window with Michelle Obama, her rather non-controversial effort to curb childhood obesity has just opened the floodgates for the right-wing media, and they mock her incessantly. Rush Limbaugh made some crack about how fat she is last week. I mean, they do it all the time. It's just nonstop.
And who better to judge
frankly,
than Rush Limbaugh?
It's time for the press to take note that the First Lady is being persecuted on a regular basis in a way no First Lady ever has been before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And by the way, did you see the Michelle Malkin's ridiculous conspiracy on why Olive Garden's menu is getting healthier? This is just when you thought you couldn't make more of a stretch.
Yeah.
With no evidence whatsoever, she tied the decision by Darden Restaurants, owner of the Olive Garden Red Lobster chains, to cut calories and improve its children's menu to a waiver it has received for the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, yeah, and the right-wing media ran with that as truth the entire weekend.
Yeah, yeah. When the fact is, quote, well, I'll read from, waivers are, quote-unquote, essentially a stopgap measure designed to keep employers from dropping health care benefits altogether until the health insurance exchanges began operation in 2014. So the vast majority of businesses that have applied for them get them.
Yeah.
So to kind of say, although Michelle Obama must personally be overseeing this process,
right,
you know, based on her menu demands, right?
Yeah, that's just, they're just bringing that back. The waivers, that was big in the spring. It went nowhere. This massive conspiracy that that's how Obama was handing out favors. So, you know, they just bring it back when they need it and just sort of create this non-story. But again, I mean, it's whatever. I mean, they are persecuting her and attacking her, not just about childhood obesity, but about anything and about how the way she looks, the way she acts. And no first lady has ever been that target before.
Well, you know, as someone pointed out last week, because played that actual the Rush Limbaugh joke, you know, some of it, Eric, you got to call it out for what it is. It's racism, because Chris, you were saying, you're like, I don't get it, she's a beautiful woman, and someone was saying, well, you know, it's because she has a stereotypically quote unquote black woman's body, and if you listen to the jokes, that's where they're, you know, generally where they're coming
from. Undertone.
It's the undertone.
Yeah, and they went crazy over, there was some photo of her bicycling on Martha's Vineyard. And so that was, you know, 24 or 48 hours of just nonstop ridicule about what a fat, ugly woman she was. And yeah, I mean, this has nothing to do with politics. This has to do with deeper issues of this unending hatred they have for her as a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they can explain where it comes from. I don't know why.
Yeah. All right. And to finish, Bill O'Reilly and Liz Cheney.
3 days before the Iraq War was launched, here's what Vice President Cheney said on Meet the Press.
I think things have gotten so bad inside Iraq from the standpoint of the Iraqi people. My belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
Okay, obviously it didn't happen, and I would love to
know. It actually did happen. We were greeted as liberators, and then we saw a massive, bloody, dangerous insurgency begin.
Wow.
That's a little bit of rewriting
history.
Yeah.
A little footnote there to the whole history of the Iraq War. I don't know, was that like a 12-hour window, a 16-hour window where we were welcomed as liberators and then it shut?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I don't even remember that window exactly.
I must have blinked and missed that whole welcome as liberators.
And believe me, I was looking for it.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. I'm a happy clappy. I was looking for the silver lining. Eric Bowler at Media Matters. See you next week, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Yikes. All right, Precious in Detroit, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Precious.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring up that complexion for the protection spill that Curtis Silva said.
Sliwa, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a Paul Mooney joke. I remember seeing the act.
Oh, so.
If anything, Paul should be asking for his money. I'm just saying.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right, thank you, honey. Aww. Oh, by the by, we might as well play this now. Coming up Saturday, we're very excited, getting on a jet plane on Friday, in matter of fact.
North Carolina, it's this Saturday. The Sexy Liberal Show comes to Asheville this Saturday at the Thomas Wolfe Auditorium. America's sexiest liberal.
And just as smart as a whip, ain't all she's smart. Down in
Asheville. This Saturday, join Steph.
85% alcohol.
John Fugelsang.
You're funny, all right. You're a scream.
And Hal Sparks.
Which one? Joke crackers.
For your last chance to get your sexy on this year, North Carolina.
Now, what about us that can't sing or play an instrument or anything like that?
Come see the show that everybody is laughing at, The Sexy Liberal Show, starring Stephanie Miller.
You're funny, all right. You're a scream. You ought to get a job on one of those excursion boats.
Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com for The Sexy Liberal Show this Saturday night.
That's the beginning of National Potato Week, and I want to celebrate.
Your last chance to get your sexy on this year, North Carolina. The Sexy Liberal Show, starring Stephanie Miller, this Saturday night at the Thomas Wolfe Auditorium in Asheville.
Your job is to distract my 87-year-old Republican mom,
yes,
by the way. Extra jobs for Nashville. 29 minutes after the hour, right back with Ruth Pundit.
Stephanie Miller.
What's the matter with everybody? Everybody's so grumpy every morning around here.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. It's that time of the morning on a Monday.
It's Lee Papa, the rude pundit. Pundit.
Good morning, Papa. Come to Mama.
Good morning.
I understand you tweeted that you're going to be talking about who is fugly at the Emmys, so I guess we should do that, first of all.
Wow. Oh, wow. Now I wish I'd watched them.
Oh, no. But one of your buddies won.
Yes, Joe Miller from The Daily Show. She was up on stage, standing there, looking great. So congratulations.
They win every year, The Daily Show. It's like on the running joke.
You know what? But now my friend is there. So.
Yeah.
Yay. Yay. I thought it was great. I thought Jade Lynch was hilarious.
I'll take your word for it.
All right. Then we're going with that.
Let's go with what's her name from The Good Wife. I heard that her dress was strange.
Juliana Margulies.
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, Jane Lynch's first dress. I didn't.
Confused says no.
You know, I'm just saying. I think she's a pantsuit girl. This is my opinion.
Did they put her in something that wasn't a pantsuit?
She was in a ball gown.
It was in a ball gown. It was not. It just wasn't a good ball gown.
And she looked a little uncomfortable in it. Let's
yes,
just say that.
I'm
going to go with that was a sight gag.
Anyway, yeah, but it was. As you know, Chris, I don't watch anything. I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell didn't say it. I didn't hear it, so yeah. I don't really know who any of them are or the shows. But I was very entertained. It's a sparkly, fun show.
Yeah. Modern Family won Best Comedy. Did you
yes,
see that?
Yes, okay. I did.
You've seen that?
I've seen that show. That's hilarious.
Yes.
I was very happy. I do watch Modern Family because I have to watch something to try to keep up with the conversation at home.
Actually, my favorite part is always the red carpet coverage because they do have usually the stupidest people alive doing carpet coverage. It's, you know what I mean? Those questions are inane anyway.
Yeah.
But there was one woman that didn't even know, like, the shows she was talking about. So, like, you don't even know, like, your area of expertise to ask the stupid questions.
You did.
She didn't realize that Entourage was done. That they,
oh.
Yeah. And, all right. And I'm guessing that a lot of them aren't, like, Game of Thrones fans.
No.
No. No.
Why is there this short guy on walking the red carpet? What's going on here? When did this become a Fellini film?
I get my entertainment, you know where, from the Root Pundit.
Yes, at rootpundit.blogspot.com and at OR Books.
I do it mostly just for the first photo. And this week's is photos that make the Root Pundit want to put scorpions in Republicans' pants.
Yeah.
Because you say that's what's left of a block of homes after the wildfires in Texas. Just timely, what with Rick Perry shooting to the top of the Republican field. Ripped through a town there a little over a week ago in Washington, D.C., despite extra disaster funding having passed the Senate, the bespectacled goblin known as Eric Cantor is holding it up in the House.
Yep. And I love that that both Texas senators and some representatives from Texas agree with Eric Cantor that there should be offsets before, say, Texas gets disaster funding. And I'm sure the people that are in that ash-filled landscape that used to be the block of their neighborhood where they lived appreciate that.
Yeah. They're just taking a stand, sure. And as you mentioned, Rick Perry, of course, joins the...
Wheel of right-wing hypocrites!
He declared all but two counties federal disaster areas and said, I full well expect the federal government to come in and do their part, which is, as you say, another way of saying, my anti-Washington rhetoric is Jim Dandy until a drought wrecks the out of my state and we can't afford to take care of ourselves, like when I cut firefighters' budgets. So, yeah.
Yeah. So apparently it's okay. The federal government doing its part is compensating for Rick Perry not doing his part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same. You know, he was the biggest, loudest anti-stimulus voice until he needed it to balance his budget.
Right. That's right. He took the money and used it, and now is campaigning on that balanced budget that he wouldn't have had without help from the federal government. But you know what? That's too many words. There's too many words there to try to figure that out. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Exactly. And when you're standing astride a haystack, it doesn't sound macho to admit that.
No. Yeah. And it also requires math.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the president, Chris, where are we? About less than an hour away is going to announce his deficit reduction. But, you know, here we go already. He made the crazy suggesting that perhaps the rich should go back to paying their fair share, like they did under Bill Clinton, who, you know, we were talking about him being on Meet the Press yesterday.
Well, his Buffett rule is, you know, to make sure that the rich pay the same amount of taxes as the middle class. That's all he's asking for.
That's class warfare. That is class warfare. Cutting Medicare and Medicaid, that's not class warfare.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this, totally.
Don't you love, actually, the class warfare that rich people are exerting against Warren Buffett, another rich person, but not the right kind of rich person, because he's the kind of rich person that wants his fair share?
Well, he's free to write a check. That's what they say.
Well, didn't Cheney say that? Cheney said that he's free to write a check. Uh-huh. Or somebody said that.
Everybody. It's a meme.
Doesn't that mean you've lost the argument? I hate when they say that. Well, if you want to pay more, then you go ahead. It's like, rather than engaging in an actual debate about what policies have worked and what haven't.
Right.
You know.
Right. Or the fact that, you know, that it's not socialism to say that government needs to function and government, whether it's a state government or a federal government, government needs to function. And the way it functions is through money it gets through taxes. This seems like pretty basic, you know, eighth grade civics to me.
I mean, and again, it seems like a no-brainer in terms of it's on people, what they're calling the Buffett tax. It would be on people making more than $1 million a year or more.
Part of that is yes, it will do a great deal of good. But there's also a symbolic aspect there as a way of just taking a stand and saying that government needs revenue to get by and to do the things that we want to do. And I really hope that Obama stands by this line in the sand. It seems like he's drawing. I mean, I don't know he's rarely ever threatened a veto, and he's actually threatening a veto this time.
Well, and I like the way they're framing it thus far. I mean, we'll see. You know, we'll go to this live in about 45 minutes, Rude. But, you know, there was a White House tweet on Saturday. It said the tax will act as kind of an AMT, alternative minimum tax, aimed at ensuring millionaires pay at least as much as middle-class families. I think that's as much tax-wise, excuse me. And, I mean, that's the way I think you have to frame it, right?
Yeah, but that's class warfare. I say that, and I say that over and over because that's all we're going to hear. That's all they want to echo in people's brains is you're going to hear endless loop constantly, and then the questions will be asked on CNN, which is supposed to be the rational network. Is this class warfare?
With
very few people there actually saying.
Rather than rejecting the premise, they go with whatever premise the Republicans say should be the premise.
Right. Exactly. And Clinton was actually on the Today Show this morning and talked about how Republicans just attempt to scare people constantly, and that Republicans always say the same thing, that any tax is bad because it stifles job creation. It's an insult to those people. They don't mind being asked to pay their fair share. Echoing what Buffett said, in fact, taking it further, saying, you know, stop treating us like we're such greedy Mr. Burns douchebags.
Yeah, well, I was saying that. I mean, that was the perfect walking human evidence, right? I mean, you know, he clearly has such a great way of putting things, you know. But you also go, oh yes, I remember when we were under those policies and we had record prosperity. You know what I mean? It just, it would seem like this argument would be over. Then we tried Bush's tax cuts for the rich. That is, according to just about any economist, largely how we got here. Now we, you know, all he wants to do is go back to the policies that you know, under Clinton, and I don't even understand how it's suddenly class warfare.
Well, because it's class warfare, because you see, everybody's got to sacrifice, and so the rich have already sacrificed enough by having to live in a country with poor people. So now the poor people have to sacrifice to make sure the rich can have even more distance from the poor.
Well, I mean, it seems like, you know, once again, to you and I, but, I mean, here we go, where they've laid bare, you know, the headline is House Republicans reject tax cuts for the middle class. You know what I mean? They finally found a tax cut they don't like because the president might win, right?
Oh, are you talking about the payroll tax cut? Where Ryan came back and said, yeah, you know, that doesn't work. The payroll tax cut doesn't work. And you're sitting there going, but you, by your own rhetoric, say that anytime you end a tax cut, that is a tax increase. That was your whole argument on the Bush tax cut debate. But now it's not a tax increase. Now it's back to fair share. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing that they get away with it. It's mind-blowing that when they show up when elections happen in their districts, people aren't just slamming their fists into the voting machine going, no, you are an idiot.
Right. I mean, and by the way, as someone pointed out, the payroll tax holiday, one of the few types of tax cuts that actually do stimulate the economy, because precisely because most working and middle-class people who need the money more, they spend it right away. So it's, you know, finally, as you say, they found a tax cut they don't like. But it's because the president's for it, right?
It's because the president's for it, and yeah, and it is a stimulus, and it actually does work to stimulate the economy rather than a tax cut for the wealthy, which simply allows them to invest and create more capital.
And by the way, they just went on record as saying, yes, of course we're for infrastructure, and then, but not this infrastructure spending.
No, we're for infrastructure spending. Well, we're for, what was it? It's supposedly there's this big bunch of money out there that's not being spent, and that it's government regulations that are preventing it from being spent, and that's how they can say that we're for infrastructure spending, but you need to cut regulations. They can get away with this contorted argument, but if a Democrat just wants to make the simple argument of spend money equal jobs, then that, again, that's class warfare and socialism.
Yeah. I mean, just the two headlines alone today. After claiming to support infrastructure investment, House GOP blocks infrastructure investment plan. And then, like you were just talking about, Bachman claims Wall Street reform is killing the banking industry as banks post record profits. I mean, the stuff they say just has no basis in reality. I can go through each and every bank and how much their profits are up this year. So, you know, but no one asks them to explain that.
No. You reach a point, and I think we're almost at that exasperated point where you don't even understand how anybody could even begin to think these things, and you sit there stunned as crowds cheer for them saying these things. That's it's sort of like coming out and saying, you know what, all that evidence that we have, all of the actual facts that we have, that's all BS. The sun revolves around the earth. And everybody cheers. Yeah, we win.
Yeah. And you know what? We may see that in an upcoming Republican debate.
Geocentric MFers.
The Rude Pundit's Almanac is available at orbooks.com or Amazon, by the way, if you love all things Rude as we do. Rude, see you next week, honey.
All righty. Bye.
All right. RudePundit.blogspot.com. Yep. All right. 46 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is a disgusting display.
Oh, you can say that again.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Nobody but
Stephanie Miller.
And me.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour. This hour brought to you by GoToMyPC.com. Access your Mac or PC from anywhere. Now even your iPad. Oh, my God. With GoToMyPC free for 45 days, visit GoToMyPC.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Enter the promo code Stephanie. Promo code is Stephanie. Todd in Minneapolis. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Todd.
Good morning.
Good morning.
When Warren Buffett suggested that taxes be raised on those of the highest incomes, of course, like you just mentioned, the conservatives shout, write a check if you feel that way. I just wonder if the next time they choose a unilateral invasion of a country like Iraq, that the conservatives who shout, yeah, we'll support it by sending their children.
Yeah. No, they never know.
Confused says no.
That's not what they mean. They mean other people can fight it. All right. Asheville, North Carolina, Sexy Liberal this Saturday. And then, I don't know, things keep getting added to my paper calendar without my knowledge. I don't even know what...
Get ready, Steph heads. This Sunday, it's the ultimate Stephanie Miller fan experience.
What?
Steph Con 11. This Sunday at the Fort Wayne Holiday Inn. Don't miss your chance to experience your inner mook. Steph Con 11. Come join other Stephanie Miller collectors.
Hey, what you got there?
I got an autograph. Franzia box?
Wow. I got a tape of all Steph's old TV shows, but it's on Betamax.
Hey, check it out. It's one of Max's fur balls.
Sweet. Hey, you want to come with me? Chris Lavoie's over there signing copies. Copies of his book, Mama Dearest.
Sure.
Don't miss StephCon 11 this Sunday at the Fort Wayne Holiday Inn.
No.
Featuring last year's keynote speaker, Jim Ward.
Just like to say, in a life, will you, you've turned an enjoyable little job that I did as a lark for a few years into a colossal waste of time.
I'm Mike in Raleigh.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Shane.
I'm Ken in Cleveland.
I'm Tom Hanks.
We'll see you at StephCon 11. StephCon 11 is not associated with the Stephanie Miller Show or the Sexy Liberal Show. It is not real.
Yeah, it's not real.
No.
That's the important thing. It's not real. I'm not going to be in, where was that?
Fort Wayne.
Oh, wait, no.
At the Fort Wayne Holiday Inn.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
Those scamps. Okay. All right. Yeah, that was a little love fest. I got some hate. I don't know why I got extra hate mail this weekend.
What'd you do this weekend?
I don't really know.
Did you appear anywhere?
No.
Usually it happens after you appear on Fox News or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Yeah. Hi, Steph. Listen to your show on your Buffalo affiliate as well as on the podcast. Only $4.95 a month when you buy a year in advance. All good, except today, Saturday, I made the mistake of waking up to your Buffalo radio station and heard the host refer to you as that leftist dyke. Yikes!
Oh, really?
And he didn't say it in a nice way. Oh. Well, see, normally they say that in a nice way.
Who hosts Saturday mornings on...
You and your guests help give me some optimism, laughter, and hope that our country can still be one of freedom and justice. You might not think so, but you are doing the Lord's work for that. I thank you. Barb in Buffalo, who's policing my station.
I want to find out who does mornings on the Buffalo
affiliate.
Sometimes
people say that in a nice way.
Huh.
I'm just curious. All right.
Could that be taken in a nice way?
I don't know. All right. What? All right. By the way, Richard in Orange writes, Steph, does the revelation that Sarah Palin hooked up with a University of Michigan basketball player Glenn Rice mean she's racist? She's not racist, I guess. She could be racist. Subject line, white on rice.
Yeah, oh, dear.
She's on that. White on rice. All right, can I have my love music? We just had Congressman Alan Grayson on Friday,
yep.
whom I love, with the heat of 1,000 white hot suns, because he tells the truth. And we were saying, remember when everybody, Republican heads exploded when he got on the floor of the House and said, the Republican health plan is don't get sick, and if you do get sick, just die.
Die already.
Hurry up and die. And so, at all these debates,
oh,
we have...
for God's yes, sake, just die!
At all these debates, we have seen the out-and-out cheering for death and for letting uninsured people die and, you know...
Whatever!
Someone sent me a daily... Oh, this is from Daily Coast.
Mm-hmm.
One of the 1,001 reasons why I love Alan Grayson. Because it's like he's incapable of not telling the truth. Does it? You know, he doesn't have any of those social
filters.
Graces. Yes.
No filter.
Filters. No!
None. Love that.
I just love this story. So he mentions that Newt Gingrich went on Fox News and called me fundamentally dishonorable twice. He called Alan Grayson that during this whole thing. Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich did.
We'll pause now so in your thought bubble you can fill in Newt Gingrich's.
The enormous irony
on it. Yes.
Of that.
Because he, of course, has never been dishonorable.
No.
Ever. Anyway, so Grayson writes, so Gingrich came to the floor of the House a year ago. I went nowhere near him. I don't like the smell of sulfur. But another member, whom I like very much, told me that she wanted to introduce me. I said, no, that's okay. Thanks anyway. I really don't want know what to say to him. But she insisted. She introduced me to Newt. I said to him, you look like you've gained a lot of weight. Newt stared at me. I said, I remember you being much slimmer back in the 90s
when
you were relevant.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Newt scowled at me and walked away.
The, yeah. The woman who introduced the two probably should have listened to Congressman Alan Grayson,
yeah.
and he said he didn't want to be introduced.
But who has the guts to say something like that to somebody's face? I'm just saying he's the same in public and in private.
Mm-hmm.
Beth in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Beth.
Good morning, dear heart.
Good morning.
I saw a Reverend Al episode last week that I thought, we really need to bring this out. He was talking about how the economy was recovering slowly, but it was still going in the right direction until the Republican House was voted in, and now it's stalled or going negative.
Yep.
And we have to say, do you want more of these people in? Because look what they're doing to us.
Yeah. Well, that's
very
why.
Very good point.
Yeah, and Beth, that's why I was saying that I thought, you know, Bill Clinton has always been so good at explaining things. But,
absolutely.
You know, when you saw him on Meet the Press, you're just like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's just the same rates that worked when you were in office, and that's why we had the kind of prosperity we had. And, right? I mean, you go, it just makes such good sense.
Well, yes, I think that's why people loved him, because he could touch them. You know, he could reach out to them, and they would understand it. Rachel's the same way. She explains really well.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Which I appreciate.
And, well, and I have to say, I thought there was another moment, I don't know if you saw it, but that I thought was very, what's the word? It was very graceful of him when, you know, David Gregory brought up the poll, which we've seen this, Hillary Clinton, the most popular national figure, you know, that there's a portion of people that think things would be better if she had been elected president, yada, yada.
Yes, I've heard that.
And I think he was very graceful with it. He just said, look, she knows the same thing we all know, that the farther you're out of the line of fire, the more popular you get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very, because, you know, as we all know how heated the primary was. But I think that's really true. You know, coulda, shoulda, woulda. You go,
that,
you know.
That makes me feel a little better about him, considering some of the things that he did say.
Yeah.
Earlier
I know.
On.
No, I know.
But
yeah.
You know, he needs needs to get out more. He needs to.
I know.
We need more voices in the Democratic Party. We're such a bunch of weenies.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and that's to me the kind of waste of time thinking like, oh, what would have happened if this or that or that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and believe me, based on experience, I don't think the Republicans would have gone any easier on Hillary Clinton. You know,
no,
so
I'm sure they wouldn't have. Look at what they when she got before the cameras a decade ago and said there's a right wing conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were horrid on her.
Well, they were so open minded to her health care plan. Back then, I'm sure that would have been equally as delightful this time. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Woohoo! It is The Stephanie Miller Show. Happy Monday, 6 minutes after the hour. StephanieMiller.com, the website. SexyLiberal.com, the Sexy Liberal website. Oh, Julie writes, you owe John Fugelsang. Mama, I'm up at the crack to watch John Fugelsang on the new MSNBC Up with Chris Hayes.
Yeah.
That was yesterday. Was yesterday morning?
Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. When this is good. You got to hand it to John. When asked what he would ask Nancy Pelosi, your boy John got in a nice plug for Sexy Liberal and Stephanie Miller. I don't know how he got to that, but that's all right. So Julie tweeted off to her friends, nice plug for Sexy Liberal by John Fugelsang on Up with Chris Hayes. If we can't have a jobs bill, at least we have Stephanie Miller's comedy to comfort you.
Okay, sure.
Isn't that comforting for all of us? All right. Sexy Liberal on Facebook as well, by the way. Lots of fun stuff up there. Asheville, North Carolina, this Saturday, my 87-year-old Republican mom will be
in the
your
city.
Your job will be to distract her.
Yeah. She'll be in the city. We still don't know if she's going to be at the show.
Yeah, not if I can help it. All right. Then Seattle. We got the big Seattle weekend. Only tickets for Friday available. Get it. Get it now. They're going fast for the September 30th. Also, Los Angeles Friday show. There's a few tickets left for that.
Mm-hmm.
Stop asking for Saturday. They're all sold out.
They're gone.
There's only a few tickets left for Seattle, Los Angeles, and San Francisco Friday the 28th. Same thing. Every city. All right. And then on to Austin and Buffalo and yada yada. Fort Lauderdale, Denver.
Whew. Phoenix.
That's not till February, for God's sakes. Don't panic me.
Well, it's on the calendar, as are a bunch of other cities that you don't know about yet.
No, I don't really know.
Yep.
Okay, Angela in Phoenix, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Angela.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
I am so happy. I have my tickets for February 25th.
Yay.
So get ready to get nervous and get ready to get broke.
Woohoo.
I just wanted to say, who the hell are these people that are sending hate mail? I mean, why are they listening to you if they hate you? I don't listen to Rick Perry. I hate him, and I won't send him hate mail. Believe me, I wouldn't even waste my time.
It's the same reason I'm always told they want to hear what you're going to say next. They just want more reasons to confirm their hatred. So I try to give them as much as I can. I give and I give.
That's great. I love that.
All right. Thank you, Anne. See you.
Love you guys.
See you in February. Yeah, she's right. Wait a minute.
Yeah, at the Orpheum Theater.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I just drove past the Orpheum Theater this weekend. I was in Phoenix. Yes, I was.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So in about 20 minutes, the president is going to, we will go live. She will be proposing $1.5 trillion in new taxes. What for rich people? As part of a plan to identify more than $3 trillion in long-term deficit reduction and slow the nation's escalating debt,
right.
His tax plan aimed predominantly at the wealthy and draws sharp contrast with congressional Republicans. It comes days after the boner ruled out tax increases to lower deficits.
All the president is asking is for millionaires to pay the exact same rate that the middle class pays.
Mm-hmm.
That is all the president is asking.
Like they did when Bill Clinton was in and
that's
we had
right.
record prosperity, as Bill Clinton pointed out yesterday. And we get stuff like this from Mitch McLiplis.
If he's feeling guilty about it,
Warren Buffett
should send in a check. But we don't want to stagnate this economy by raising taxes.
Oh, please. Oh, please. By the way, can we just dispense with that argument? No one's allowed to make that argument anymore. My right-wing brothers tried that on me. Why don't you just send a check? We can either have a debate about tax structure in this country, or you can just go, you go ahead and send them if you want to. Like, it should just be voluntary for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like they've got a very childish argument going on there.
Yes.
No, you're the one with the childish argument. Hi,
Jim Ward.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
John Boner. Yes.
It's a very simple equation. Tax increases destroy jobs.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Like under Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's why it was so powerful to watch him talk about it yesterday, wasn't it? You're just like, that's the guy, remember?
Right.
When that guy did that thing with the taxes,
right.
We have jobs.
And Republicans said, we will not be held responsible for the catastrophe that's going to happen. Then the economy improved, and so was all our idea.
Yeah. By the way, administration officials made clear Sunday Obama would veto any Medicare benefit cuts that aren't paired with tax increases on upper-income people. Ho-ho!
Oops.
We're playing their game!
J'accuse!
Ha-ha!
We're playing politics with politics.
Politics, huh?
How dare you?
That? All right. You know, kids, Mama is an animal lover, as you know. I've rescued both of my dogs, Max and Fred. Mama's a handsome man. So there's something going on.
Fred?
Excuse me?
Fred?
There's something going on tonight here in West Hollywood we want to talk about. Ellen Labenthal is president of Animal Alliance and co-organizer of Fur Free WeHo.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds dirty, but it's not. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Talk to us about, we got a big vote tonight in West Hollywood, right, City Council?
Absolutely. Tonight they're going to vote on a historic ban to ban the sale of retail fur. Sale of retail apparel fur.
Right. Well, and you know, a lot of stuff that starts here obviously goes across the country. So
absolutely, that we saw that with the spay and neuter bill in Los Angeles. After Los Angeles passed the bill, we saw one in Texas, Florida, New York, all over the nation.
Yep. Now, several stores in West Hollywood, I'm told, have already voluntarily removed fur. Right.
Absolutely. I actually went into those stores, including one of the most high end stores in West Hollywood, which is Max. And I'd say within 10 minutes, they removed the fur from the floor.
Wow. You know, this is going to sound, if you listen to the show, you know, I'm kind of an elderly shut-in, and I pretty much just wear baseball caps. And
right.
Is this a weird question? But I wasn't aware that that many people still wear fur, fashion-wise.
Well, unfortunately, you know, you're right. It went into decline in the 80s and the early 90s. And then Anna Wintour, you know, the publisher
right.
of Vogue magazine, decided to bring it back.
Right.
And she went to the designers, and as we all know, especially if you saw the movie September issue, yeah. And she dictates fashion, you know, to this country, or at least to the people that are considered themselves fashionistas. And she single-handedly brought fur back as fashionable. But that's what a certain segment of the population is doing. But polls show, you know, by and large, most people do not approve of fur, and
mm-hmm.
most celebrities do not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. It seems, I mean, I will make a deep, dark confession to you. I have a mink jacket in my closet, but it's from my dad got it from me in, like, God, when I graduated college, I think, in, like, 1983 or something. But that's what I mean. I mean, I've never worn it since then, I don't think.
Go out and buy one. I hear
right,
you.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? It seems like, you know, that should speak to that I think we have moved forward on animal rights because, it seems to me, like you say, more and more of a dated thing.
Yes, there's much more awareness, you know, of how horrific fur is. There's nobody, unlike, you know, eating meat or certain other things that people may be doing, there's no one that's out there that's wearing a fur that knows it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
They've just chosen, they've made a conscious decision to wear it despite the fact that it is cruel.
Right. Ellen, obviously we talk politics on this show a lot, and we were recently talking about Newt Gingrich got glittered. You're familiar with that, right?
Right.
I think it was, you know, gay rights supporters. And while I hate Newt Gingrich and everything he stands for, I actually agree with him that that's assault. You know, I just was curious because I know that some fur activists have thrown, like, paint on women that have jackets. Are you, how do you feel about that?
You know, I understand the angry feeling because if you've viewed the undercover footage like I have and like many of the activists have, it's hard to not be just furious when you see somebody wearing it because you know what was behind, you know, that fur and, you know, a living sentient being suffering, you know, not just, you know, the way that they died, the way they lived up until they died.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that feeling of tremendous rage. It would be like for some people if they saw somebody, you know, abusing a child in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, or leaving a child in a hot car. So I do understand that rage. to actually take that action, I just think that there's better, more favorable actions we can take to make a difference, like
yeah.
we do with this campaign.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I'm talking about is tactics, because I support the, you know, certainly the cause, but I do think, I really never thought I would agree with Newt Gingrich, but he said, you know, it is assault. It's frightening. You don't know what it is. It could be acid. It could be, you know, and so I just think, you know, you lose public support when you do, when you cross that line. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying,
exactly.
Yeah,
even
yeah.
though, like I said, I can understand the sentiments behind the throwing of the paint, I do believe that there are better tactics. Yes, you're right.
Yep.
Like what we did, where we rallied for 6 weeks. We raised awareness in West Hollywood,
right.
you know, for the issue, and then people were able to go forward, vote for the Furphy candidate,
right.
you know, put him in office.
Oh, listen, I'm one of those people that pesters people in person when they don't have their dog fixed.
Oh,
I just try to nicely go, you know, you really, and a lot of times I hate to say it, it's guys. They go, oh, no, I'm never doing that to him. And I'm like, you know, you really... And then you try to have the discussion with them, you know.
It's hard not to. I do the
right.
same thing when I see a woman wearing fur. I love
yeah.
to do it especially in a nice restaurant, because then they see I'm in the same place that they are, and I frown down on what they're doing. It's not just they're crazy activists as they see it. There's people that go to the frequent the same places they do that do not wear fur and do not approve of it.
Mm-hmm. It is furfreeweho.com, right? And
yes.
You want people to show up tonight at the city council
Absolutely.
Meeting?
Absolutely. 6:30, put on a sports sticker, fill out a support card, and show your support.
All right. Ellen, great to talk to you, and thanks for fighting for the furry ones.
Oh, well, thank you for supporting this.
All right.
All right.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Ellen. There she goes.
I remember when Johnny Carson divorced one of his many wives. Part of the deal when the alimony was $4,000 or some $40,000 a month in furs.
Ah,
to keep
what?
Furs for, yeah.
Yeah, that's important.
Who needs
in
any
Malibu.
Fur at all in
yeah.
friggin' Malibu?
What?
And secondly, you have to keep buying new ones? whatever.
Yeah, that was what was that old? Which movie was that old joke? Not was, did the character said, you know, do you know when the animals died for that coat? And she said, you know, how many animals I had to get this coat.
Yeah, was that Ruthless People?
I don't know.
Sounds like it.
Have I ever quoted a movie from this century?
No.
No. All right, 17.
Just before Dr. Strangelove takes the mask off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the
Herbie
rat,
the love bug.
Yeah.
Okay.
Herbie the love.
What? 17 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12.
Yeah, this is a story.
Stephanie Miller.
Nasty dog.
Oh.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Did Rebecca do something bad?
Why?
Because look at all the bookings for tomorrow. She must have gotten drunk and put something about me on the internet or something.
No, she realized that Aisha couldn't be with us tomorrow, so she booked all these other special
she booked
guests.
David Schuster, Richard Wolff, Ari Berman, John Nichols, and Charlie Pierce.
That's right.
Wow. Rebecca, what picture did you put of me on the internet this weekend? Someone's furiously trying to keep their job out there. Now I can feel it.
No, it's just that she's very, very good at her job.
She's overachieving now.
Yeah.
All right. Melanie in Buffalo, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Mel.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
So listen, this guy that called you a dyke this weekend.
Oh, no, a leftist dyke.
Leftist dyke, even better.
Yes.
The guy is, he's obviously a real right-wing tool. The guy's like a, he's not a creationist. He believes in intelligent design.
Oh, boy.
He thinks
that's creationism.
That, healthcare should be left to the free market. You know, the guy's just an idiot. And I have to say, he runs a promo that's so insulting. He insults Jesse Jackson and Sharpton, and then he makes, you know, the classic Republican joke about Bill Clinton. He mentions Monica, and he does this dad
that's
Clinton
current.
Imitation.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you know,
cutting
they
edge.
Have no sense of humor, and they play the same, you know, and they run the same jokes over and over again.
Mm.
And the guy's just an idiot.
Mm.
He really is.
Tell him this leftist dyke sends her love. Give him a call.
Maybe
All right.
I will. Maybe I have to call his show this weekend.
All right.
Coming up.
Thanks, Mel. News. All right.
Maybe this ass clown.
Maybe I'll get him tickets to Sexy Liberal at Shays in November.
Well, maybe
he wants to.
Maybe that's why he's on the weekends.
Now, I'm come sorry. On.
That,
all right.
Was that below the belt?
Was it Jane Lynch hosting the Emmys? What's with the homophobic emails? I got another one. As a matter of fact. She was great, wasn't she, Demi, to see her? I thought she was awesome. I loved it. Not just a gay woman hosting, but talking about her kids. Mm-hmm. Just there must have been heads exploding.
But you can't.
Go!
Was there a single right-winger in the audience besides Angie Harmon?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know.
She was, you know, had a friendly audience there.
I got another love letter from, Steve. Someone named Steve. Now I get it. I understand why you're such a mean-spirited, empty left-wing whack job. Answer, you're a GD fruit. It all makes sense now. I'm a GD fruit.
That doesn't really apply to females.
I'm a fruit. All right.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm sure there's right-wing heads exploding about Jane Lynch talking about her children on the Emmys. However, I just want to say that this is a straight family. These are straight people that had kids. A Bristol mother, Bristol, Tennessee, and her two children are accused of placing a package containing dirty underwear in a hospital waiting room and calling in a bomb threat. The police captain said the family told the police they thought the fake bomb would be funny.
Wow.
Hey, y'all, you know what you do?
You know what I did? I told them it was a bomb.
GD fruit, Jane Lynch ain't funny. Honey, turn on something else on the TV. Okay. Saying passes for for comedy in that family. Okay.
And the, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Janice in Phoenix real quick. Hey, Janice, welcome.
Hey, Steph.
Hello.
I heard your discussion about fur and in fashion. And do you know about the segue from fur into feathers? The designers are all using feathers this year. I went out to find a headdress for a 2030s cabaret show and found real feathers on headdresses that you could buy.
Were you performing in a cabaret show?
What's that?
Were you performing in a cabaret show?
Yes.
Oh, I
see. Awesome.
Because it's not often you say I went shopping for a headdress unless you're...
all right. It was fabulous.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you were. Okay. It's a little confusing. I went shopping. All right. Jeffrey in San Francisco, who I'm sure has shopped for headdresses. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, Steph.
Hello.
Hey, I have an idea for our winning this election next year.
Okay.
How about having Hillary Clinton as the vice president nomination?
Well, that's been speculated before, and I've put that out there only because, and I don't know if it's true, but I'm told that Joe Biden has always wanted to be Secretary of State, and so some people have talked about what if they swapped, and I think it would be a Jim Dandy idea.
Sure.
Because then she could be president for 8 years after Obama's.
Oh.
And then everybody's happy.
By the way, that fur joke you told before the break?
Yes.
Apparently, that was delivered by Jo Beth Williams in the Ellen Barkin body switch movie called Switch.
I love that movie.
Okay. So there you go. That was from my friend Tim.
I have a thing for obscure Ellen Barkin movies. Sea of Love? Loved it. Obscure Ellen Barkin movies? Love them.
Isn't every Ellen Barkin movie obscure?
No.
For example, there's...
Big Easy?
Yes, there's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
She's awesome. All right. Represents the budget monster yesterday.
It adds further instability to our system, uncertainty.
Oh, please.
And it punishes job creation and those people who create jobs. This looks to me not a very good sign, because it looks like the president wants to move down the class warfare path.
Class warfare
will simply divide this country more, will attack job creators, divide people, and it doesn't grow the economy.
Name one job creator.
Who? He also went on to say that...
Class warfare, Chris, may make for really good politics, but it makes for rotten economics.
Really? So the economics that we got to because of these exact same tax cuts under George Bush, that was good economics? No!
For a handful of billionaires,
29 minutes after the hour. Ian Millhiser next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Let me be clear. There is nothing on the planet that I love more than
Stephanie Miller.
Thank you.
Wow.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. We will go to join the president live when he starts speaking about the budget, etc. Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, which sounds macho, joins us now to talk about his recent article. You know, I saw this, Ian, and we talked about it. In this case, Republican president or Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett proposes rigging the Electoral College for Republicans. How's that going for him?
Unfortunately, it seems like it could be going pretty well for him. You know, he has a little bit of opposition from his own party members in his state, but he's pushing forward. He thinks, you know, why bother to have an election when you can just steal it?
I mean, you know, we've been talking about this state by state, Ian, that they this is not, you know, an accident, that they are trying to make it less and less likely that people that are, you know, that are prone to vote Democratic can vote, correct?
That's right. I mean, you've seen the voter ID laws, which are really just let's disenfranchise minority and poor voters laws. You've got laws make it harder to register, laws restricting early voting. And then you have this Pennsylvania plan. And, you know, let me describe this because it's really insidious what they're doing here. Pennsylvania has 20 electoral votes. And in the last, in all of the presidential elections for the last 20 years, all of the state's electoral votes have gone to the Democratic candidate. So the Pennsylvania Republicans have figured out, well, we've really gerrymandered this state up so that most of the congressional districts are solid Republican, Democratic couldn't win if they wanted to, districts. So what we'll do is we'll say that rather than having the winner of the whole state get the electoral vote, the winner of each congressional district will get one electoral vote. And it works out to a giveaway of about 12 electoral votes to whoever is the Republican candidate. Just here, have some free votes.
Yeah, as you point out, had this system been in place when Obama won the state by 10-point margin, he would have in fact taken only 11 out of the state's 21 electoral votes.
That's right.
Which I'm sure they didn't know that until you. You know, I mean, that's exactly it. This is so, like, it's so transparent, isn't it?
You know, I mean, that's the thing about it. In fact, there's actually a quote from one of the leaders of the Pennsylvania Republican Party today who said, you know, well, if we're in a state in play, if we think we can get all the 20 electoral votes, we being the Republicans in this case, then I think we probably shouldn't do this. But if we're not, if, you know, if Obama's going to win the state, then I think there's a case that we should be doing this. So,
yeah.
You know, they're not even trying to hide the fact that their sole reason for this plan is to try to rig the presidential election.
Well, and you make a good point, too, that, you know, the Electoral College is a terrible idea, but when a major blue state's Republican leadership adopts this kind of reform piecemeal, it's nothing less than an attempt to rig the election. I mean, as you're saying, if we can get rid of it entirely, that would be great.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a big fan of something called the National Popular Vote. The idea behind the National Popular Vote is you get a group of states that equal 270 electoral votes. That's the amount you need to win the presidential election. And they all agree that whoever wins the vote nationwide, whoever wins the whole country, gets all their votes. So it neutralizes the Electoral College, and it neutralizes the type of games that the Pennsylvania Republicans are trying to play right here. I would love that. But if, you know, it's not a solution to do this piecemeal thing. Say if the blue states divvy their votes up so that the blue states have to give a bunch of free votes away to the Republicans, but Texas can give out all the votes it wants to Rick Perry.
Well, right. And you know, talk to me a little bit about the voter ID laws, because that also just seems so insidious in that, first of all, they're addressing a non-existent problem, this, you know, voter fraud. And, you know, in the meantime, as we continue this debate about class warfare, and they're, you know, they're losing more and more in the polling on each of these issues, they have good reason to try and disenfranchise, for instance, the poor, right?
No, it's exactly right. I mean, you've got – so there was a Supreme Court case recently dealing with voter ID laws, and the Supreme Court was only able to find one example of in-person voting fraud, that's someone showing up at the polls and saying they're someone they're not and getting to vote, in the last 150 years. So this is a non-problem. But what these voter ID laws do, these laws that say you have to show a picture ID before you're allowed to vote, is they wind up disenfranchising a large number of minority voters who don't already have IDs, a large number of poor voters. voters, a large number of elderly voters, all of which do not have picture IDs. And as it turns out, when you look at the demographics of the people who are disenfranchised, they're overwhelmingly Democratic voters. So it's a way to shave a percentage point or two off of the Democratic candidate's total and, you know, give the Republicans an advantage that way.
You know, it reminded me seeing Bill Clinton out there, you know, yesterday on Meet the Press and this morning that, you know, he was the one, right, that always said, you know, when people vote, Democrats tend to win. I mean, and it seems like that's why, if you can win fair and square on the issues, why not do it, right, rather than having to, you know, try all these tricks.
Yeah. And why muck with your legitimacy? I mean, you know, if Rick Perry gets the most votes, he should be president of the United States. That's how a democracy works. If Mitt Romney gets the most votes, he should be president of the United States. You know, you and I do not have to like the outcome of the presidential election to agree with the fact that we live in a democracy. But, you know, when you start to create these situations where, you know, Barack Obama could get less votes, or even Rick Perry or Mitt Romney could get less votes and not be the president, it doesn't just undermine the you know, the integrity of the election, it undermines the legitimacy of the person who wins, because then you have someone in there, they're wielding the powers of the presidency, but they don't have the will of the people behind them.
Yep, absolutely. It is Ian Millhiser with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Great stuff. You can go to where you read your stuff, where, at AmericanProgress.org?
AmericanProgress.org and ThinkProgress.org.
All right. Yeah. Terrific.
Think Progress is a great site, by
it
the
really
way.
It really is.
Yeah.
Ian, thanks so much, as always.
Thank you.
All right. There we go.
I remember the Supreme Court's justification for letting George Bush get in, despite the fact that he didn't actually win. Was it, well, if it were determined that he didn't get all the votes, then it might undermine his credibility.
Yes.
Presence, which is kind of the point of
yes.
an election. You.
Thank God he did so much to restore his credibility through his presidency, though. That's the important thing. Once he got in there, he certainly proved us wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yep, there he was, Bill Clinton, yesterday.
We're never going to balance the budget again, as we did when I was president.
Hello.
Without a combination of three things: spending restraint, new revenues, and more economic growth.
He dismissed Republican claims the tax on the wealthy would discourage job creation, hamper economic growth. He said Republicans in Washington always say the same thing. He called their argument an insult to wealthy Americans, many of whom don't mind paying more, i.e. Warren Buffett.
Yep.
Okay. So David Gregory then had Mitch McLiplis on.
The first question from my colleague Brian Williams in the debate that had to do with the death penalty to Rick Perry. Then during the CNN debate, Wolf Blitzer asked Ron Paul whether a healthy man who had opted not to get insurance should be allowed to live. Does the audience response in both cases trouble you as a Republican?
Look, we have a lot of people running for president. There are going to be a lot of debates. A lot of things said, a lot of audience reactions. Mm-hmm. I don't have any particular reaction to what's going on in the Republican campaign for president right now.
Well, maybe you ought to come out of your shell, Mitch, and join the rest of the decent human.
He said the word turtle tunnels again yesterday.
He said it. He said turtle tunnels.
Meet the Press.
Oh, my God. You're a talking turtle.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're a talking turtle.
Does he not know?
A talking turtle who talks about turtle tunnels.
Surely an aide knows that he's...
We spent all the stimulus money, all we got is turtle tunnels. Why is everybody...
Why is everybody laughing at turtle tunnels? It's not a laughing matter.
All right. We're going to break now?
Yeah, we should probably break now so that we can take as much of the president as possible.
So we can go live to the president.
Yes.
All right, 42 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
See? We're having a nice time.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Mm-hmm. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, awaiting the president. 47 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere, Amy in Massachusetts. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Steph, how are you?
Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to repeat the mantra over and over and over again. Tax cuts do not create jobs.
Yep.
Say it with me. Tax cuts
do not create jobs. Join us. Okay.
Join us. Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking about joining us, if you're in New York City, stop by Occupy Wall Street. I don't know if you guys are talking about it. There's a group of people down there trying to fight for equality and money. Get money out of our elections and let us vote.
Yep.
Who we want to be our leaders and speaking for us. And,
yep.
I get so mad I just can't even talk.
All right. I hear you. By the way, if I have to hear this one more time.
What?
Bachman claims Wall Street reform is killing the banking industry. You're killing them, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, as banks post record
they
profits.
They have record profits.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
She was just speaking, as Rick Perry has, in repealing the Dodd-Frank, which is killing the banking industry,
right.
She said. Here are the fun facts. Some banks may be surprised to learn they are on the verge of death. Let's see. Bank profits rose substantially in the first quarter of the year, with banks showing the biggest profits since before the recession. It's sunny in the second quarter as well. All good. Weather report good. J.P. Morgan Chase up 13%. Citigroup up 23%. Wells Fargo's profits up 29%. Goldman Sachs more than doubled its profits. Morgan Stanley's up 17%.
If that's being killed, bring it on. That's,
yeah. Killing them.
Pretty,
yeah.
Killing them with lots and lots of money. They're drowning in it.
Over-regulation. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Governor Perry saying the same thing on the campaign trail.
Whether you're a banker or whether you're a credit union, freeing them up from overregulation, overregulation of all of those industries is obviously part of the problem. And repealing that Dodd-Frank Act is one of the first things that we need to do. The overregulation from Washington, D.C., size fits all, has to end.
You pinhead.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing that caused the massive global financial meltdown was lack of regulation.
He said the administration's not doing enough to, quote-unquote, free up Wall Street.
Oh, my God.
Gotta free him up. Woo! Go, doggy. By the way, just back in 2008, with the financial system cratering, he criticized the banking industry, saying it has too often been run on greed.
That sounds a little flip-floppy.
Interesting.
That's weird. And despite his stated opposition to bailouts shortly after TARP, remember, failed to pass in the House, he sent a letter to Congress in his capacity as head of the Republican Governors Association, and which read, "We strongly urge Congress to leave partisanship at the door and pass the economic recovery package."
Huh.
He now denies that the letter expressed support of TARP.
That wasn't me. That was some other fella.
At a campaign stop,
it was
woman,
Josh Brolin pretending
woman, a woman asked if he supported TARP. He said, "No, ma'am." All right. Michelle Bachman.
And not only repealing Obamacare, also repealing Dodd-Frank, which is killing the banking industry.
Killing the banking industry.
I've got the bill to repeal both of them.
Yeah.
Killing
because
them.
Because we are in the last days.
Yeah.
We are in the final days.
Maybe she can ask Jehovah God to free up Wall Street.
We are in the last days.
Yay.
You are Jehovah God.
Yay!
Okay. Carl in Nashville. Hello, Carl.
Well, hello. Well, as far as the picture IDs and those type of things, listen, here's the thing. The Republicans only have so many angry white men to vote for them. And eventually they're losing the numbers game because of this pesky thing called debt.
They'll die off,
This is pesky little thing called debt. And they're running out of angry white men to vote for them. So it's only a matter of time before all these little trickeries and different things, it'll work against them. Hey, listen,
that's right. When all the old men die of anger issues, all the old white men.
I have a delightful, tasty bit of irony here in Nashville. About 40 miles from Nashville, about 40 minutes from Nashville, is a city called Spring Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Spring Hill had a big plant called Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And it really brought the economy booming in that area over the past 20, 15, 20 years, or whatever, how long that factory was there. Well, you hear all these Republicans bitching and complaining about the money that was loaned to the car industry, GM in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And surprise, surprise, now you have to remember, Spring Hill is about as red of redneck and tea as a tea party as it gets.
Yep.
And the irony of that is that the payment, the money that was given to GM to keep them from going out of business, they're opening back up the Spring Hill plant.
That's right.
Thousands of jobs are coming back to that Tea Party red district, that red area. Those people would never vote for President Barack Hussein Obama. And he, by engineering and helping, giving GM money that their leadership complained about constantly,
is saving them thousands of jobs.
Yep.
And the ironic thing, they will never, ever vote for that.
I know. And if Republicans had had their way, you're right, the American auto industry would have gone under with all of, with all those jobs.
Under.
Yep.
Yay.
Yeah, yay for that. All right. Rick Perry, by the way, continuing his man fight with Mitt Romney on Massachusetts health care.
In Massachusetts, the costs have increased by more than $8 billion. That's what that socialized individual mandated health care bill that they put in place in Massachusetts did. Those who had insurance are now paying the price for an individual mandate for those without insurance who must join the system. Private insurance premiums in that state have gone up by more than $4 billion. The problem with state-sponsored health care is if you cannot contain it just within the borders of your state.
Oh, it's a creeping
say,
socialism.
Did I say 4 billion? I'm an 11-gajillion, a bunch, a lot.
First of all.
I pulled it right out of my ass. But
first of all. Isn't it ironic? Just interesting about the mandate, since he just mandated the executive order for the HPV vaccination. That was a mandate. It actually said mandate in the thing.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
In addition, the fun facts on mandates. The mandate to obtain health insurance was first introduced by congressional Republicans as an alternative to Hillary Clinton's. Remember that?
Yep.
Healthcare? The individual mandate developed by the Heritage Foundation. And supported by many problem Republicans as recently as 2009.
They're like the right-wingiest of the right-wing think tanks.
Mm.
Wow.
Ultimately, the Texas governor, whose state has, here's some fun facts, the highest uninsurance rate in the nation.
Yep.
And the second highest health care premiums, can criticize Massachusetts and Western Europe all he wants. The truth is the Bay State has expanded coverage to almost all residents, successfully contained spending for the newly insured population, and lowered government expenditures on uncompensated care, while European countries already spend far less of their GDP on health care and provide universal access to all of their citizens. So, yes, one day we'll all have our minimum wage jobs and no health insurance like they do in Texas if we have a President Perry.
Yee-wee!
Yee-doggy! What was the place we could all get jobs?
Whataburger.
Whataburger. And you get a Whataburger job and
you get a Whataburger job.
Health insurance?
Although their What a Chicken sandwich is mighty tasty.
Is that what it's actually called? What a Chicken sandwich?
Yeah, it's called the What a Chicken.
What a Chicken.
What a
Chicken. Guess what else isn't working so well in Texas? The abstinence only.
Yeah.
They've now added Abstinence Plus.
Oh!
It's a new program.
Super duper abstinence. Now with Retsin.
It's super abstinence.
96% of schools in Texas school districts teach abstinence only. However, it's not really working. Reports from the Lone State are grim. As a state, they rank 5th for most teen pregnancies, 4th for the highest rate of syphilis among teens, and 3rd for the most young people infected with HIV. Why?
Farvin says it's abstinence with benefits.
Yeah, there you go.
You can have a job. You can be a pregnant teenager with a job at Whataburger. With syphilis, if we have a
Perry. Yeah, great. Syphilis burger. What a syphilis.
I think instead of health care, we should
for the side helping of chlamydia.
We should just trade what chickens. For health care.
Mm-hmm.
What a...
Chlamydia.
We've replaced your Folgers crystals with...
Chlamydia.
In the Midland District, you remember where W's from, they have begun shifting their sex education efforts from abstinence only to Abstinence Plus, a program that emphasizes abstinence, but is comprehensive in contraceptive and safe sex practices, just in case. The president is finally speaking here.
Business owner and virtually every working man and woman in America. And the proposals in this jobs bill are the kinds that have been supported by Democrats and Republicans in the past. So there shouldn't be any reason for Congress to drag its feet.
Shouldn't be.
They should pass it right away. I'm ready to sign a bill. I've got the pens all ready. Now, as I said before, Congress should pass this bill knowing that every proposal is fully paid for. The American Jobs Act will not add to our nation's debt. And today I'm releasing a plan that details how to pay for the jobs bill while also paying down our debt over time. And this is important because the health of our economy depends in part on what we do right now to create the conditions where businesses can hire and middle-class families can feel a basic measure of economic security. But in the long run, our prosperity also depends on our ability to pay down the massive debt we've accumulated over the past decade in a way that allows us to meet our responsibilities to each other and to the future.
Socialist class welfare.
Now, during this past decade,
warfare.
Profligate spending in Washington, tax cuts for multimillionaires and billionaires, the costs of two wars, and the recession turned a record surplus into a yawning deficit. Hmm. And that left us with a big pile of IOUs.
Who is in charge?
If we don't act, that burden will ultimately fall on our children's shoulders. If we don't act, the growing debt will eventually crowd out everything else, preventing us from investing in things like education or sustaining programs like Medicare.
All right, back more with the President live on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Minutes after the hour, we rejoin the president live and eating clerks here.
The wealthiest taxpayers and biggest corporations. Tax breaks that small businesses and middle class families don't get. And if tax reform doesn't get done, this plan asks the wealthiest Americans to go back to paying the same rates that they paid during the 1990s.
Thank
you. The Bush tax cuts. I promise it's not because anybody looks forward to the prospects of raising taxes. We're paying more taxes. I don't. In fact, I've cut taxes for the middle class and for small businesses. And through the American Jobs Act, we cut taxes again to promote hiring and put more money in the pockets of people. But we can't afford these special lower rates for the wealthy.
Ooh,
rates,
good
by
phrasing.
The way, that were meant to be temporary.
Yep.
Yep.
Back when these tax cuts back in 2001, 2003 were being talked about, they were talked about as temporary measures. We can't afford them when we're running these big deficits. Now, I am also ready to work with Democrats and Republicans to reform our entire tax code, to get rid of the decades of accumulated loopholes, special interest carve-outs, and other tax expenditures that stack the deck against small business owners and ordinary families who can't afford Washington lobbyists or fancy accountants. Our tax code is more than 10,000 pages long. If you stack up all the volumes, they're almost 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Errol Kerr-Kanter.
That means that how much you pay often depends less on what you make and more on how well you can game the system. And that's especially true of the corporate tax code. We've got one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world, but it's riddled with exceptions and special interest loopholes. So some companies get out paying a lot of taxes while the rest of them have... end up having to foot the bill.
Yep,
and this
zero.
Makes our entire economy less competitive and our country a less desirable place to do business. That has to change. Our tax code shouldn't give an advantage to companies with the best connected lobbyists. It should give an advantage to companies that invest in the United States of America and create jobs in the United States of America. And we can lower the corporate rate if we get rid of all these special deals. So I am ready. I am eager to work with Democrats and Republicans to reform the tax code to make it simpler, make it fairer, and make America more competitive. But any reform plan will have to raise revenue to help close our deficit.
Yes.
That has to be part of the formula. And any reform should follow another simple principle. Middle-class families shouldn't pay higher taxes than millionaires and billionaires. That's pretty straightforward. It's hard to argue against that. Warren Buffett's secretary shouldn't pay a higher tax rate than Warren Buffett. There's no justification for it. It is wrong that in the United States of America, a teacher or a nurse or a construction worker who earns $50,000 should pay higher tax rates than somebody pulling in $50 million. Anybody who says we can't change the tax code to correct that Anyone who has signed some pledge to protect every single tax loophole so long as they live, they should be called out. They should have to defend that unfairness.
Grover, over
explain by somebody who's making $50 million a year in the financial markets should be paying 15% on their taxes. When a teacher
job
making $50,000 a year is paying more than that, paying a higher rate. They ought to have to answer for that. And if they're pledged to keep that kind of unfairness in place, they should remember the last time I checked, the only pledge that really matters is the pledge we take to uphold the Constitution.
Woo-hoo.
Now, we're already hearing the usual defenders of these kinds of loopholes saying this is just class warfare.
Yep.
I reject the idea that asking a hedge fund manager to pay the same tax rate as a plumber or a teacher is class warfare. I think it's just the right thing to do. I believe the American middle class, who've been pressured relentlessly for decades, believe it's time that they were fought for as hard as the lobbyists and some lawmakers have fought to protect special treatment for billionaires and big corporations. Nobody wants to punish success in America. What's great about this country is our belief that anyone can make it and everybody should be able to try. The idea that any one of us can open a business or have an idea and make us millionaires or billionaires. This is the land of opportunity. That's great. All I'm saying is that those who have done well, including me, should pay our fair share in taxes to contribute to the nation that made our success possible.
Socialist.
We shouldn't get a better deal than ordinary families get. And I think most wealthy Americans would agree if they knew this would help us grow the economy and deal with the debt that threatens our future. It comes down to this. We have to prioritize. Both parties agree that we need to reduce the deficit by the same amount, by $4 trillion. So what choices are we going to make to reach that goal? Either we ask the wealthiest Americans to pay their fair share in taxes, or we're going to have to ask seniors to pay more for Medicare. We can't afford to do both. Either we gut education and medical research, or we've got
someone
to reform the tax code.
Called an ambulance for that talking point. Class warfare talking point.
We have to give up tax loopholes that other companies don't get. We can't afford to do both. This is not class warfare. It's math.
Yeah.
Good.
The money's going to have to come from someplace. And if we're not willing to ask those who've done extraordinarily well to help America close the deficit, and we are trying to reach that same target of $4 trillion, then the logic, the math says everybody else has to do a whole lot more. We've got to put the entire burden on the middle class and the poor. We've got to scale back on the investments that have always helped our economy grow. We've got to settle for second-rate roads and second-rate bridges and second-rate airports and schools that are crumbling. That's unacceptable to me. That's unacceptable to the American people. And it will not happen on my watch. I will not support any plan that puts all the burden for closing our deficit on ordinary Americans. And I will veto any bill that changes benefits for those who rely on Medicare but does not raise serious revenues by asking the wealthiest Americans or biggest corporations to pay their fair share. We are not going to have a one-sided deal that hurts the folks who are most vulnerable. Look, none of the changes I'm proposing are easy or politically convenient. It's always more popular to promise the moon and leave the bill for after the next election or the election after that. That's been true since our founding. George Washington grappled with this problem. He said, towards the payment of debts, there must be revenue. That to have revenue, there must be taxes. And no taxes can be devised which are not more or less inconvenient and unpleasant. He understood that dealing with the debt is, these are his words, always a choice of difficulties. But he also knew that public servants weren't elected to do what was easy. They weren't elected to do what was politically advantageous. It's our responsibility to put country before party. It's our responsibility to do what's right for the future. And that's what this debate is about. It's not about numbers on a ledger. It's not about figures on a spreadsheet. It's about the economic future of this country. And it's about whether we will do what it takes to create jobs and growth and opportunity while facing up to the legacy of debt that threatens everything we've built over generations. And it's also about fairness. It's about whether we are in fact in this together. And we're looking out for one another. We know what's right. It's time to do what's right. Thank you very much.
Wow.
All right. Wow. Edie McClurg, your instant punditry, please.
Well, I think that those sirens that were...
It's the death of many Republican talking points.
They were just going around and around the White House.
Yes, they were falling one by one. Class warfare. Damn it, that's not going to work. He framed that too well.
Class, go around again. I don't want him to hear this. Turn off the sirens.
That was an unusual number of sirens, wasn't it, for a speech? That's me thinks that you might be right, Jen. They were trying to distract. Look over here. Yeah, I thought it was good stuff, though. I thought he framed it well.
Oh, yes.
And that's the guy we voted for.
Yeah. And J'accuse, a veto threat.
Ha, ha, ha.
Can he do that? That's
right. I don't know. I'm a little pessimistic right now.
They already wrote the responses. I'm sure, right? They're going to be any second, Chris. They're already against it before they even knew exactly what
whatever
it
is, right. I'm against it.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm sure instantaneously we'll be back with their response. All right, 17 minutes after the hour. Good stuff. And it is Mondays with McClurg. What's better than that? Nothing.
Hi.
Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yeah. It's it's International Talk
like a Pirate Day.
Yeah, Happy Talk Like a Pirate Day.
I did a show with Clive Revel, a famous British actor, and we were standing around a lot waiting to work, and he says, "Oh, we're doing a pirate scene, and I've got your lines for you," and he wrote the letter R on it.
That's all you need. Just say R. All right, 23 minutes after the hour.
Every day we talk like a pirate day in Somerset and Devon.
All right. We're becoming unglued early in the week. David Bender joins us now for some instant analysis of the president's speech.
David Bender.
Indeed. We've got a president who actually pulled out his sword and waved it today.
Yes, I think so.
This was our swashbuckling president. This was George Washington Obama.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And you know what? I think, Steph, you and I owe Jim Ward an apology.
All right.
Are you ready for this? It turns out, Jim, you have been right all along. There is a vast conspiracy that has been covered up for the last 32 months. Barack Obama, the guy we just listened to, has been held prisoner in the White House basement.
They let him out.
He's been a captive.
It's campaign Obama.
This is President Obama. This is not campaign Obama.
You know,
this is a guy who is governing now.
Yeah. This is, I know, I think Reince Priebus just tweeted already, the head of the RNC, about, speeches don't create jobs. It's like, stop presidenting already.
Obviously. Yeah, stop doing your job. Now, here's what we've been talking about, folks, for months and months and months. And you know, Stephanie, no one loves Obama as much as you and I do, except maybe Michelle and the kids, right?
Right.
But having said that, the one thing this president has not done as president is to say the reason we are in this problem is that specific people are responsible for it. He started out talking about the legacy of debt. He didn't say George Bush, but he made it very clear. Well, this is a legacy. He used it over and over again.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Is that, David, I was talking about watching Bill Clinton on Meet the Press yesterday. I don't know if you saw him, Edie, but he's on Today's show. And you just remember how clearly and how well he can explain things, and I felt
that's
like
right.
the President Obama did that today.
Yeah, he made it very clear.
Well, I actually was thinking, watching Bill Clinton yesterday, that wouldn't it be nice to get that third term in somewhere for Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
But because he explains it so well, and one of the things...
Well, because he's the walking human evidence of going, remember when things were like this when I was president?
Yeah,
because I did A, B, and C. This is
actually worked.
You're welcome.
Now let's also look at the very, you know, the subtle details in this speech. Two things that happen. Again, what I've been saying all along, that the way American voters, in fact, the way most people look at the world is it is, you know, either or. And if the president is going to be the hero of this piece, there have to be villains, and there are villains. And he's called them out now by name. He called John Boehner out not once but twice. He said John Boehner walked away from a deal. He mentioned him by name. He said John Boehner just the other day said it's my way or nothing. It's actually,
right.
In terms of infrastructure, it's my way and no highway.
But I think he did it in a very easily understandable way for most people. You know, we were saying, weren't we, Jim, last week, we wish that he'll use that Warren Buffett line, and there it was. Mm-hmm. You know, Warren Buffett should not have to pay less than his secretary does tax rate-wise.
And you know what the Republican response to that is going to be? Warren Buffett should fire his secretary.
Yeah.
Clearly making too much money.
Money-grubbing bitch,
It's all her fault. Let's outsource the job. But you're absolutely right. What he did is he put it in understandable terms, and he said there are going to be choices, and we have to decide who we want to be as a country.
I've got your class warfare right here.
Yeah, I feel like those ambulances were for the...
Washington,
yeah.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like those ambulances were for the death of the class warfare talking point. What do you think? They were circling endlessly.
I think they were actually Mitch McConnell's heart attack. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
he finally heard the president, and I'm not wishing any ill on Mitch McConnell. I wish Mitch McConnell a long and happy life in retirement in Kentucky. What I do wish is that this speech is going to be heard over and over again all over the country, and I think that's what's going to happen, because obviously, you know, Republicans on those same talk shows this weekend, Stephanie, said the jobs bill is dead on arrival, the tax on millionaire class warfare. This has got to be taken to the American people, and the pressure now has to be on to say this president is right. It's time to govern. It's time to fix these problems, and he wrapped it all in creating jobs, and that's what this is about.
And you know, the first time we've heard veto. I will veto it if it's not combined with the making the rich pay their fair share.
I will veto, absolutely. First off, you said I have the pens ready.
Yeah.
And I was encouraged to know that, you know, they haven't taken away his pens.
Yes.
But in fact, I will veto anything that doesn't include it. Now, if you're listening very carefully, you also heard that he said he would consider any changes to Medicare only in that context. So that's the one thing that will make some liberals queasy, what changes to Medicare. But he made it very clear. He was not talking about allowing benefits.
Right. It's to providers, and it's not going to kick in for quite some time. David, hang on one sec through the break, okay?
Sure.
And then we have to get Edie McClurg's take on the Emmys as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Artsy character study about
Stephanie Miller,
who has a lot of holes drilled into her head by a deranged veterinarian named Slaughterface.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show in the midst of Mondays with Edie McClurg, David Bender on the back line. David Bender,
Back line and in the front door.
Yes, you're like my little pocket pundit. I picture you. You're always everywhere all the time, watching everything. And then suddenly you're there on my phone. You've watched everything. You know everything that's happening.
The emphasis is on the dit, not the pun. let me make it really plain here, is that what we saw is what we have been missing. We saw a president who was not going to back down, who is itching for a fight, and has drawn a line here. And there is a fight now. It's not going to go through the Congress. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to happen because the American people are going to say, we've had enough. And this president is...
Well, it's like he already answered their response about the class warfare, yeah. Which I liked, you know. I mean, it wasn't exactly I welcome your hatred, but it was close.
Yeah,
here's what they're going to say.
This is the pre-buttal. This is don't try that stuff. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And he pulled it off. Edie McClurg?
Yes, sir.
What did you think?
What did I think of the president? I thought he was acting very presidential and not waffling, stating it clearly. I was sometimes I have a hard time following him in his circuitous route, and he laid it out very clearly.
Not today. Yeah.
He was
direct, and he, you know, George Washington, again, he chopped down that cherry tree. He was right there, and he told the truth to the American people. He said, these are going to be the choices. They're not easy ones, but we have to make them.
Yep.
And when an adult actually walks into the room, you actually heard him get the laugh when he said, this is about math.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. David, before I let you go, I don't know if you saw Bill Clinton, but, you know, you've seen this new, poll? That says, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, first of all, Bill Clinton said Cheney's just trying to cause mischief in 2012 by suggesting that maybe Hillary Clinton should run. But, you know, I thought he was very graceful when David Gergia asked him about, what does this poll say? One-third of Americans believe Hillary Clinton would have been a better president than Obama. Two-thirds view her favorably. But he said, you know, she knows as well as anybody, the farther you're out of the firing line, the more popular you get.
Of course, and she's been doing a wonderful job, as far away from the political firing line as you can be. She is a diplomat. She's Secretary of State. It's easy to be popular when you're around the world trying to solve problems on behalf of the country. So they'd be doing the exact same thing, and this is I think it was you who were talking about this yesterday, the idea that at any given point, whoever is the Democrat in charge. Bill Clinton, remember, all the things that were said about him would have been said about Hillary, would be said about Dennis Kucinich. He's a Martian vegan. I mean,
that's why I think some of these are just, it's a media storyline to go, she has 64% approval rating. Obama's favorable rating at 50 in this poll. But, you know, as Bill Clinton said, he's the one in the thick of it. He's the one in the firing line. It's actually 34% said things would be better under Clinton administration. About half, 47% say things would be about the same. So it leads me to believe, what's the point of these polls exactly?
you just asked the very question I want to leave us with, which is it possible to take a pledge right here? I'd like to be the official pledge maker of the Stephanie Miller Show, that we will stop paying attention to presidential polls for the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back 4 years to right now, so it'd be September 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton had a 20-point lead over Barack Obama.
Yep.
So polls don't mean...
And I had my black listeners calling and saying, you silly, naive, lame-ass white girl.
Exactly.
This country is never going to elect a black man. You're so ridiculous.
Don't raise our hopes. That's a terrible thing to do.
Can I
just say, my favorite line, not from the president, but from the Emmys, because I want to throw it to Edie McClurg, was Jane Lynch. I don't know if you saw it, Stephanie.
Bedtime.
Did you see Jane Lynch?
I did. She was great, I thought.
And Jane Lynch actually said aloud on national television, people wonder why I'm a lesbian. Ladies and gentlemen, the cast of Entourage.
Yeah, and I love the opening sketch. She goes through the set of Mad Men, and they're like, hey, Toots, get us some coffee. And where'd you get that man haircut? And she's like, by the way, this haircut costs more than you make.
Turn around.
trying to walk out of here now.
Yeah. Now, let me just say one thing. Let me just say one thing before you go. And, Chris, you know if I said this one, I've said it a million times. That Ron Paul sure is electable. I need to throw him a bone. He won the straw poll out here, a big victory in the California straw poll, leaving Romney and Perry in the dust.
And at the end of a series of straw poll victories, Ron Paul will be a straw man. Yeah. He will be filled with straw. It will be like the Wizard of Oz. Oh, look, it's Ron Paul. He's hanging here in the middle of the field. That's all this is. This is, he can get his supporters to show up and win votes that don't matter, and he'll do that probably for the next 25 years.
Yeah. All right. David Bender, we will return to you on Thursday as usual.
Love you guys.
All right.
Bye.
Love you too. There goes the David Bender. You were, Edie, I guess you were not a big Emmy watcher because you were out doing your own show.
Yes.
What were you doing?
It's the Old Girl Review.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all Second City and improv people.
Awesome. Great. And it was a good time was had by all. All right.
The best.
All right. Turning to Celebrity Stack, how many people, anybody here think Brad Pitt should probably shut his pie hole about Jennifer Aniston at this point?
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a long ago and far away.
Yeah, she's probably still a little raw for her. You know what I mean? A little bit.
Leave her alone.
He had to, delisted writing. Yesterday, Brad Pitt became douche hole of the day. Oh, we should give him our Emmy salute. I think you should just not talk about it. He said, it became clear to me I was intent on trying to find a movie about an interesting life, but I wasn't living an interesting life myself. I think my marriage had something to do with it, trying to pretend the marriage was something that it wasn't. I'm just saying.
In the field of feminine hygiene, I have awarded Newlander's Douchebag of the Year.
I felt the need to do a musical number after the Emmys. Very nice. So he had to try to step out of the he stepped and he said, the point I was trying to make is not that Jen was dull, but that I was becoming dull to myself and that I'm responsible for.
Right.
Okay.
Whatever.
Sure.
All right. What's his name? That I can never say their names right. The party crashers, Salahi.
Tarek and Mikhail Salahi.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, they broke into the White House thing. They're the Real Housewives of where?
D.C.
Jim? D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you remember he put out this is very embarrassing, kind of an APB on his wife, if anyone's seen her, blah. And it turns out she was guitarist from Journey.
Yeah, that's
right. She ran off with a rock band.
Which, how random is that? Like, unless you were, the, drummer from Foghat. I don't know. I just...
Well, she's a fame whore.
I just found it random.
She's going to find somebody more famous to latch on to.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so then the sheriff's department said that she... they found her, and she was, quote-unquote, where she wanted to be, which is kind of awkward. So now he's filing for divorce.
Yeah.
I guess.
He also...
Now that he's totally bankrupt.
He also accused the... Journey from guitarist from Journey of emailing him a picture of a penis.
No.
I don't know. I don't know what that was about. I'm just guessing.
I actually know a guy who used to play bass for Foghat.
Really?
Well, there's a circuitous connection.
Thank you for playing. That is so random. Yeah. The biggest story in Hollywood. It seems like Charlie Sheen has regained his sanity. Did you see him on Tonight Show and then he was on the Emmys last night?
No.
Yeah.
He seems to.
Good for him.
He's
off the tiger blood, I guess.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Is he rehabbing again?
I guess. What did he get the Emmys last night? He wished them nothing but good, whatever he said.
From the bottom of his heart.
Yes. I wish you nothing but the Two and a Half Men.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when he was on the Tonight Show, he said he would have fired himself if he'd been in their shoes. So, yeah, he seems to have.
Who are you and what have you done with Charlie Sheen?
I know. All right, Ozzy Osbourne regrets being a bad father when he was younger. He battled, as we know, some addictions for the majority, which affected his parental duties. But Jack says his father has endeavored to make it up to his kids. The good news about Ozzy Osbourne giving you bad advice, they probably couldn't understand what it was anyway. Probably, Dad, don't worry about it. I couldn't understand what you were saying anyway, so... No.
Good murder, curry. Well, no.
Edie, one thing I love here is a really I have to be the only radio show in America that referenced not one but two Ellen Barkin movies that were sort of brand. What was it, Switch? I loved that movie. Where she wakes up and she's in the body of, there's a man that died. I don't know, she wakes up as a man in her body. Something, it's hilarious. I loved it.
That was the plot of about 80 movies in the 80s.
Love, Sea of Love. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was good, though.
All right.
Sea of Love was
I just
good.
Remember her going, I can't think with all this hair. I don't know. I just loved it. However, who even knew? They're remaking A Star Is Born, which I also loved, with Kris Kristofferson, member of the Barbra Streisand.
Uh-huh.
There was another one with James Mason.
Yes. Judy Garland.
And Judy
really?
Garland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the original.
Finally, something before my time. Okay. Clint Eastwood is directing it. Beyonce is starring in it, and it looks like he has just hired Christian Bale to play the celebrity.
You and I have done professionally. Da-di-da-di-da.
No, he will play the celebrity husband who becomes emasculated as his wife's popularity rises and his own falls. Although he probably has a little stronger reaction, I'm guessing. Good for you!
I remember, Christian.
That's just a different spin. The husband just goes nuts. Instead of slinking into depression. All right, 45 minutes after the hour, we continue with the waning moments of Mondays with McClurg on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Is it raining where you are? I don't know what that means, but I like the sound of it.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Mondays with Edie McClurg continues apace. Tomorrow, every pundit in the world is booked on this show. Do I have a list? Rebecca went nuts. I don't know why. It's David Schuster, Richard Wolff, Charlie Pierce,
Ari Berman
of The Nation.
Wow.
I mean,
it takes all of them to replace Aisha Tyler?
Yes. It takes a village to replace Aisha Tyler.
That girl does have a motor mouth.
Yeah,
she puts more words into one sentence so fast. It's like, whoa, wait, I got to catch up.
Here's what we missed this morning on MSNBC. Representative John Fleming, Republican of, I believe, Louisiana, he says he can't afford a tax hike because he only has $400,000 a year after feeding his family, so he couldn't possibly pay any more because you can't really live on that.
Too bad. I guess the yacht and the horses and this weekend vacation.
Tragic.
That's tragic. House. It really is. Mm. So sad. Oh, here is, by the way, I wonder what the Republican response will be. Here it is from the RNC research. Speaking of fairness, how many middle-class Americans got a $535 million loan guarantee from Obama only to file for bankruptcy? Solyndra, huh? Uh-huh. That's their answer to love of God. You're a green girl. You have a leaf, don't you?
I just got my leaf back. People are so amazed at this car. They kept running into it.
I saw one, and I thought of you. Yeah.
It got scraped twice in parking lot. Ran away. The people ran away.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if you're paying attention to this whole thing, but it's so ridiculous. They applied, first of all, under the Bush administration. The CEO is a Republican. I mean, they're trying to use this as, it's Obama's Watergate. They gave, money to this solar company that went bankrupt. But, Jim, we were saying in the testimony, they're saying obviously one of the reasons is they're competing with Chinese company who get billions of dollars. And so, the Republicans are using this for why we shouldn't invest in green energy. This, to me, proves why we should.
Exactly.
Because they're not able.
You should be investing the way the Chinese are.
Thank you.
I have solar panels on my roof.
Right.
Which feeds the electricity that runs my car. I use no gasoline, and I have all the sun making the electricity for me.
You're the greenest girl I know.
You're a commie socialist green hat.
You are literally.
I'm making up for all my past sins.
You were saying during the break, Edie, that Rick Perry scares you, as he does most of us. But, you watch these
Republicans.
Want
to see something scary? Look at my crotch. Come on, look at it.
No!
Look at it.
Wash while I'm
Can't take your eyes off of, can you?
Yes, I can, actually.
Oh, go blind!
But, you know, you're watching these debates, and you're going, wow, they're cheering executions and letting uninsured people die and whatever. So this week, I don't know if you follow this, the Supreme Court took the extraordinary step of issuing an emergency delay in the execution of a Texas death row inmate just moments before he was supposed to be killed. A psychologist literally had told the jury because he was black, he'd be more likely to commit future violence. Well, if that's not racist testimony, you know.
And
I mean, they're not questioning whether he's guilty. Yeah. And so.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, Perry said, oh, you know, the high court was taking the appropriate path. But it's strange he's saying that because by all accounts, I mean, he could have stopped this and he didn't. He had not acted by the time the Supreme Court did, which was at the last minute. So. Anyway, moreover, the Supreme Court's intervention shows Texas appeals process is not effective in every case, as Perry claims. Everyone from his prosecutors to one of his victims had asked for a new sentencing hearing, you know, out of basic fairness. But, yeah. Anyway, speaking of polls, a new CNN, because you wonder if you're crazy, if those of us, you know, pro-choice, pro-equal rights kind of folk. A new CNN poll finds an overwhelming majority of Americans still believe in a woman's right to choose, with 78% of respondents saying they want abortion to remain legal under any circumstance or under certain circumstances. Just 21% they say they would support outlawing abortion under all circumstances. The number is almost unchanged from a year ago, despite the conservative effort of conservatives to severely restrict access to abortion on the state level.
They're never going to eliminate abortion because it's too good a campaign issue for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just float that out there every 4 years.
It's such an incredible. Michelle Bachmann talking about, hypocrite. You know, she doesn't want the government getting up and, you know, vaccinating little girls. Forget it. But she's fine with the government getting involved in any other women's health care issues. It's just. Darn. All right. And the headline is, after claiming to support infrastructure investment, the House GOP blocks infrastructure investment plan.
Yay.
Oh.
Who needs that?
Whoa, bridges, let them fall down. Yeah. Dams, let them spill over.
Boehner laid out opposition to Obama's proposed $30 billion to keep teachers and law enforcement officers in their jobs, rejected money for school construction, and again claimed Republicans support spending on infrastructure. But he wrote the GOP opposed the way Obama's plan would make those investments. You see, he did this with his hands when he said it, so that's wrong.
He's doing it in a black way.
This just, yeah.
That's what,
yeah, he did it with a black power salute.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, This is the, just for those of you keeping track, the third major infrastructure investment plan Republicans have opposed since Obama took office in 2000.
Is anyone on the right paying attention to that? Do they really think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
Letting bridges collapse while people are driving over them?
Yeah, and
to me, this is the
clearest example that they're just against whatever he's for. They finally found a tax cut they don't like in the payroll tax holiday. Now they're against that. What's unusual about the payroll tax, which funds Social Security, is that cutting it almost entirely affects middle and working class people. The tax applies to the first roughly $100,000 a person earns. Someone who makes $200 or $300 gets the same tax cut as someone making $100. Republicans seem to be withholding a tax cut as a bargaining chip, as Boehner said he's willing to negotiate on extending payroll tax cuts. I mean, as we were saying, it's one of the few kind of tax cuts that's stimulative, and they're against that, of course, because it's the present.
It's giving me a headache in my eye.
Here's some good news before we go. Governor Scott Wanker's office targeted by corruption probe after FBI raids his aide's home.
All right.
Maybe we won't have to recall him. Maybe he'll be impeachicated before then. New details emerging about a potential corruption investigation into Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and his staff after FBI agents raided the home of Cindy Archer, who until last month was his deputy administration secretary. There's already been one conviction relating to Walker's campaign, a businessman supporter of his, sentenced to 2 years probation stemming from two felony convictions of exceeding state campaign donation limits and laundering campaign donations to Walker and other state politicians. They can only win by cheating, baby. That's why they're cheating so much. Just saying.
Yeah.
Allegedly. All right, Edie, you have had a vast and varied show business career. However, I don't think you have had as large a foot fetish club as I have.
Excuse me?
When I had my late night show, I actually had a foot fetish fan club. That was entirely devoted to
looking at your feet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Police in Central Arkansas are looking for a foot fetishist who alarmed two women by trying to suck their toes.
Dick Morris.
The man is described as white, from 5 foot between 5'10" and 6'2", with graying hair, a pot belly, and quote really messed up toes.
It is Dick Morris.
Ew.
Yikes.
Although Dick Morris is a lot shorter.
Okay.
He probably is. He said that's where he did all his campaign work for Bill Clinton. Yeah. He approached an elderly woman sitting outside her apartment and put her toes in his mouth. All right. Edie McClurg, delightful as always. Tune in tomorrow for every pundit in the world. I'd like to thank Chris Lavoie, Jim Ward, Rebecca Taylor. We'll see you tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Wow.